I'm going to call the City of Franklin's Common Council to order. Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Mayor Taylor.
Here.
Alderman DeAndrea.
Here.
Alderman Mayer.
Here.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderman Taylor.
Here.
Alderman Schmidt.
President.
Alderman Skaronski.
He's going to be about quartered here in quarter two.
Please rise. Join with me in pledge allegiance to the flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
There's no objection. I'm going to go right to the Eagle Scout presentation and come back to the citizens' comment period and let the people get back to their cars. They may still be warm out here.
Have a special guest with us today. He is hoping someday he's going to be a senator or congressman or something like that. But I have a presentation for you. And it's whereas the conferring of an Eagle Scout is the highest and most coveted rank that can be bestowed upon a Boy Scout, where less than 4% of all Scouts in the United States achieve this goal, whereas such an award is an earned award and that the recipient must perform and successfully complete and pass the nationally prescribed set of rigid requirements exacted to achieve an Eagle Scout award. And whereas Jeffrey Rettinger, has been a member of the Boy Scout Troop 539 for the past 7 years, whereby he achieved the rank of Eagle Scout on August 21st, 2013, by earning a total of 21 merit badges and serving his troop in various leadership roles. Whereas Jeff's Eagle Scout service project consisted of organizing a team of workers who could put in a total of 108 hours building 5 raised garden boxes for the St. Joseph Academy Elementary School in Milwaukee, where the boxes are used by the teachers to show students how to grow vegetables. And whereas Jeff's family is here today. Do you want to introduce them?
There's my mom, Barb Redkin, my dad, David Redkin, and my girlfriend, Kirsten Twitwich.
What a nice round of applause. Friends, scouting leaders, and other members of Boy Scout Troop 539, as well as the community, are very proud of this achievement. Now, therefore, I, Thomas M. Taylor, Mayor of the City of Franklin, do hereby congratulate Jeffrey on his outstanding achievement of becoming an Eagle Scout. Congratulations, Jeff.
Not too much more to say. Just thank them again, like I did. You know, me. Most of it was other people helping me. So.
Okay. He shared with me, was it Sunday? Yeah, yeah. Packer game. That would like to get into politics one day, and I certainly hope that he and all of his colleagues, because we have so many Eagle Scouts in Franklin, either be on boards and commissions of the city, school board, or run for Congress, Senate, or state representative. So if there's anything that I can do to help Jeff later on, just please let me know. Thanks again. Thank you.
Okay, now I'll turn back to the citizens' comment period. Are there any citizens wishing to speak during the citizens' comment period? Are there any citizens wishing to speak during the citizens' comment period? Any citizens wishing to speak? Seeing none, I'm going to close the citizens' comment period and turn to item B2. And it's just a letter from the Root River Root Pike Watershed Initiative Network thanking the City of Franklin for partnering in 2013. Actually, Ron Rollmice, our assistant city engineer, has been going to many of the meetings, but they do great work, as you're all well aware, and the city has been extremely active in trying to help them carry out their mission.
I've been attending.
And you've been attending well?
Yes.
And Alderman Wilhelm has been in attendance as well, for the record. Before you have item C, approval of the minutes. Regular meeting of December 17th, 2013. Any comments, questions?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Now turn to item D, hearings. Item 1, public hearing regarding proposed amendments to Chapter 92-9 of the Municipal Code pertaining to impact fees for the purpose of exempting public schools from application of each of the various impact fees and to suspend for 2014 automatic annual rate increases for each of the various impact fee rates. Is the staff wanting to say anything before we read the public notice? If not, could you read the public notice, Madam Clerk?
Notice is hereby given that the Common Council of the City of Franklin will conduct a public hearing on Tuesday, January 7th, 2014 at 6:30 p.m. or soon thereafter as the matter may be heard in the Common Council chambers at Franklin City Hall to hear public comment regarding proposed amendments to Section 92-9 of the Municipal Code pertaining to impact fees upon land development pursuant to Section 66.0617 of the Wisconsin statutes. The proposed amendments are to exempt public schools from application of each of the various impact fees and to suspend for 2014 automatic annual rate increases for each of the various impact fee rates imposed under Section 92-9 of the Municipal Code. Copies of a public facility's need assessment prepared pursuant to Section 66.0617(4) of the Wisconsin statutes and a copy of the proposed ordinance are available for viewing in the office of the city clerk during normal business hours. The proposed draft form ordinance is subject to revisions following public hearing and the further consideration by the City of Franklin Common Council, including but not limited to revisions modifying the automatic annual rate increase.
All right. Anything before we open it up for public hearing? I guess I would offer a couple things, and that's that after meeting with the school board president, Janet Evans and Mr. Liberta, there was a desire on the part of the school district to, speaking from the president of the school district, to see if there was a way that impact fees could be waived. And there was also some discussion with Mr. Milzer, who sat on the impact fee task force, that when he was sitting on it, that the intent of that task force was never to impose impact fees on the residents of the community. And then I had some discussions with Mr. Bob Swindrowski, who is the chairman of the Impact Fee Task Force, and his recollection and going through his notes also indicated that there was no intent on the part of the task force to impose impact fees. And so he came down and testified to that fact. But then later on, Mr. Swindrowski also contacted me and said that he had a conversation with Bill Milkey, and that Bill Milkey of Rukert Milkey, and said that based on that conversation, the issue of whether a city can or cannot impose impact fees apparently had been changed. So I wanted to get that out for the record because I had talked to individuals in the past about where this whole issue is going to be, and now it's going to be here for a public hearing. And I'm sure, and I think I had some discussions with the city attorney as well on this. So after the public hearing, we'll hopefully we can flush those issues out and see if what we have before us is a thing that can legally be done if, in fact, the council chooses to waive the impact fees. So with that, I'm going to open up this issue for public hearing. Are there any parties wishing to speak during the public hearing? Yes. If you could, please state your name and address for the record.
Randy Ritter, 7621 Mission Hills Drive here in Franklin. That's in the second automatic district, which is entirely within the Franklin Public School District. I was, previous comments notwithstanding, on the city's first two impact fee task forces. The first one led to having impact fees, and the second one was to adopt what the city had done to state law, because at the time we did our impact fees, there was no state law in Wisconsin. And that gets me to the first issue, that of the suspension of the automatic increase. When this was originally done, there's always been an escalator. When this was originally done, It was based on a published construction cost index, actually an average of two construction cost indexes. Apparently, somewhere along the way, that was changed to a fixed increase, which has the ease of simplicity, I suppose, but doesn't necessarily vary in relationship to actual costs. So I can certainly support suspending that for this year. Certainly would support an ongoing analysis to determine whether whatever the escalation means is being applied is appropriate in any given year. Now, with regard to the other item, the exemption for public schools, it's always been, I presume, possible to do that. It's never been done in this city. There are two compelling reasons why it has never been done in this city. Those reasons remain in effect, and as far as I'm concerned, it should not be done in this city. There are also two compelling reasons why this particular action, making it retroactive, in my view, also should not be done. So we've got a lot of ground to cover. Yes, we have impact fees by local ordinance. Yes, you can change the ordinance. You can make the impact fees go away for any impact fee payer, any group of payers. You can make the whole thing just go away. You can't make the impact go away. The impact was here before we had impact fees. You do something about the impact fees, the impact will still be here. Somebody will have to pay. It's only a question of who has to pay. And that's where, it comes down to, we've got multiple school districts in this city, but only one of them actually has schools in this city. I have been in touch with Sarah Burmeister, the superintendent at the Oak Creek Franklin School District, and with Lowell Holes, the superintendent at the Whitmore School District. Each of them has confirmed they have no schools in this city at this time. Each of them has confirmed their future plans for facilities, short-term, long-term, expansion, additions, replacements. No plans for schools in the Franklin School District or in the city of Franklin at any point in the future. So what this ends up being is this is just a way to push some of the impact of Franklin School District projects off on people in the Oak Creek, Franklin, and Whitmore school portions of the city. Now, I live in the Franklin School District. I support Franklin School District projects, but no, I want no part of pushing any of this off on taxpayers in the portions of the city that are not in the city of Franklin. As far as I know, it's always been possible to do that. It's not been done. It should not be done. The operating principle has always been, if you have a vote on it, then you pay for the impact of it. If you don't have a vote on it, you don't pay for the impact of it. Seems perfectly fair to me. It's always been that way. It's going to go right on being that way in terms of us being in different school districts and who gets to vote on what. Effectively, this creates a second class of citizens. Those city residents whose taxes are paid on go to pay for the impact of projects on which they do not have a vote, and those whose taxes go to pay for the impact of projects they do have a vote. There's never been any place for two classes of citizens in the city, and there should not be. The other thing that this does, frankly, is, I don't know, the terminology gets a little cautious here, but does the term deceit apply? I think it does. Right now, when we send the referendum issue to the people, it says in the referendum issue how much they're being expected to approve, an amount not to exceed, and it's instructed to find its construction costs. And, presumably everything pertinent there, too. Now, if you do this, this will pull out the impact fees. They still have to be paid. They don't go away. You can't make the impact go away. Somebody's got to pay for the impact, but it won't be included in what people are told is the cost of the project they're being asked to approve. I have no... where is that good government? Withholding information from the people on the cost of the project they're being asked to approve. I don't see whether that's in the public interest. This is going to take this piece out, put it someplace else. They still have to pay it, but it won't be included in what they're told is the cost of the project. So those are the two things that have always been the case, the reason why there's never been an exemption for public schools, and there should not be. Now, with regard to this particular action, this would make it retroactive. The people have already voted on this. They were told in referendums what the amounts were going to be, the amount not to exceed. This would take a portion of that out, push it over onto city taxes, would have no, and that would be in addition to, not in lieu of, that would be in addition to what the people thought, those who voted in favor of it, thought they were approving. So, I don't know, in what jurisdictions is it good government for the to come in after the people have already voted and change the terms of the deal, and to change it in a way that increases the total burden on the taxpayers, the total amount that people have to pay. I can remember when it used to be very much the business of the Franklin Common Council to find ways to reduce public expenditures, to reduce the burden on the taxpayers. Now here we have this action that's going to pull some of those costs out of what people were told was going to be the price tag for the projects and shift that over to city taxes, which is going to be in addition to what they thought they were going to pay. So there's two more reasons why I think this action is just completely inappropriate. Now, I've heard nobody make any good argument in favor of doing this, but I have heard two or three things mentioned. One of them is other municipalities don't charge schools impact fees. Well, I can't speak to what other municipalities do or don't do. I'm going to say, call Carl Rowett, and then I'm going to say, whatever it is, it's irrelevant. Now, you go to the Blue Books information on the state website, you go to the League of Municipalities website, both of them have a list of municipalities in Wisconsin, and they both come up to 592 cities and villages. Now, there are multiple lists of school districts in Wisconsin. DP, the Department of Public Instruction website has one, Great Schools has one, Wikipedia has one. They all come to different totals. If you look at what they include, some appear to include districts within districts, charter schools. If you try to narrow it down to the sort of traditional geography-based school district that we have here and what people typically think of, you're looking at just a little bit under 450. So basically statewide, you've got about a third more municipalities than you have school districts. And even a cursory look at a Wisconsin map shows that the vast majority of the state is still rural. So the typical situation is not the Franklin situation at all. It's a school district with one or more municipalities within it, plus a significant amount of surrounding land. The Franklin situation is an extremely unusual situation, a municipality with multiple school districts. But even that doesn't accurately define the Franklin situation. The Franklin situation is one where you've got a municipality with multiple school districts, but only one of those has facilities in the municipality. So only one stands to benefit from this. So I would simply, people could say whatever they want about whatever other municipalities do. To me, it's not relevant to this situation. Now, I've heard the term double taxation dropped. I've never heard anybody explain exactly how that would work. I would presume it might have something to do with, well, the school district levies taxes and the city levies taxes, and somehow this all works out to be if the school district pays money to the city, that's double taxation. Now, if that's happening, that would concern me to some extent. I'm presuming it doesn't, because I'm presuming that when it comes time to actually approve the projects to expand city facilities because of the accumulated impact, that you're actually spending the impact fee money on those projects and thereby reducing whatever city tax might be involved on those projects. And to me, if that's, as long as that's the case, then I'd say no, there's no double taxation there.
Mr. Ritter, just for the sake of consistency, we usually imposed a 3-minute rule on in the public hearings. I just want to see if there's anybody else wishing to speak. And then if after other people speak, if you wish to continue, then you could continue. But I don't know if there's others that wish. If not, is anyone else wishing to speak in the public hearing? Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure that...
No, that's fine. That's fine. I understand that. I was aware of that in citizen comment, but I didn't know it applied in public hearings. But whatever the rules are, that's fine. I'm right. Good with that. The double taxation thing. So as far as I'm concerned, there's not, if there's in fact the case, if you're not spending the impact fee money on the projects for which the impact fees were imposed, then yeah, I would encourage you to consider this an opportunity to explain that to people. But I'm assuming that it is the impact fee money is being spent on those projects, and so there's no double taxation involved. And the other issue is what was in the memo that was brought up in support of this. They didn't include public institutional expenditures in the analysis. Well, I would also say that's irrelevant. It's always been about the impact and who pays for the impact. And the principle has always been those who don't have a vote on it don't pay for the impact of it. Those who have a vote on it pay for the impact of it. To me, it ought to stay that way, because there's no chance of this ever working for the benefit of the Oak Creek, Franklin, and Whitnall School District people. This is just a way to get Oak Creek, Franklin, and Whitnall people to pay some of the impact of Franklin School District projects. Now, I'll make this really easy. District 3, District 4, District 5, District 6. 3, 4, and 5, you've got Oak Creek, Plankton, and school district people. In your districts, District 6, you've got Whitnall people. Of the two referendum issues that went to the voters in November of 2012, well over a year ago, and two of them were approved, 45% or more of the people in Districts 3, 4, and 5 voted against them. Over 51% of the people in the District 6 voted against it, and those were just the people in the Franklin District portion of your districts. So there are some substantial people who did not want these projects to begin with, and by inclusion, didn't want the impact of it. Now, you take those substantial numbers of people, you add in your Oak Creek, Franklin, and Whitnall voters who didn't even get a vote on them, there's a majority of your voters right there. There's no question how you might be voting on this if you're voting to reflect your constituents' interests. I will stand up for your constituents. I think this is not an appropriate deal for them. I would encourage you to vote accordingly and go ahead with the suspension of the automatic increase, but strike out the exemption for public schools. It, to me, I've got no support for prices of citizens or any of the other factors that go along with this. And to me, this is just, there's never been a place for this in Franklin. As long as things remain the same, there shouldn't be a place for this in Franklin. And for all of you, I will say this. Nationwide, statewide, it's no question we've become very divided. No doubt in my mind that one of the major reasons for that is because for generations now, government has been dividing people, largely into who government takes from and who government gives to. Who government does something for and who government does something to. As far as I'm concerned, the people at the state and federal levels are already overachieving on that. We don't need for you to pile on. We're divided into three school districts. Nobody can do anything about that. It's something that, for the most part, is lines on a map, and we've learned to live with it. You do this, it's not just lines on a map anymore. It's dollars out of people's pockets. It's first-class citizens who have a vote on things versus second-class citizens who don't have a vote on things, but their tax dollars still get spent on the impact of those same projects. As far as I'm concerned, we need you to find ways to bring us together, not ways to aggravate and amplify the differences that nobody can do anything about anymore. So I would implore you, plead with you, please strike out the exemption for public schools. I understand it might be popular for some, but to me, it just simply is not appropriate in this city. It never has been. It isn't now. It's not going to be. So please strongly consider that. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. I did ask earlier if there was anyone else wishing to speak on this issue, but I'll do it one more time before I strike the gavel and close the public hearing. Is there anyone else wishing to speak during the public hearing? Yes. Oh, and for the record, Alderman Skronsky arrived at about 10 minutes to 7.
Hey, my name is Lynn Winkowski, 7935 South 67th Street, and I would urge you to support this as it's presented. It really clearly is an issue of double taxation. You're just charging the district for costs that aren't real. Putting up a building, a school district building, does not add to the burden of providing city services. I mean, the school district already is a service, so it clearly is double taxation. Why do we need to pay for it twice? So I urge that you vote to exempt the district.
Can I ask you a question? Did this come up at any school board meetings, the subject?
I guess I'm not sure if I should answer that. I'm here as a citizen, so.
Okay.
You know.
Okay.
All right?
Sure.
Thank you.
Anyone else wishing to speak during the public hearing before I close it? Is there anyone else wishing to speak during the public hearing? Going, Mr. Ritter?
Again, Randy Ritter, 7621 Mission Hills Drive. I will address that particular comment I didn't include before but my understanding is A, the impact fees have already been paid. B, they were calculated the same way that impacts for other projects are calculated. So if you're going to buy into the assertion that there's no impact, you better take a look at what you're doing with the impact fees, because the impact fees were calculated based on the impact of this project the same way they're calculated, I'm presuming, and city staff can correct me on this, the same way they're calculated on other projects. So if there's no impact, if your theory for voting against this for this exemption is there's no impact from school district projects, then you better take a look at how you're calculating impact for other projects, because I'm assuming the impact fees were calculated the same way based on the same factors. So do you want to support impact fees, or do you want to waive them entirely? I don't know. That's up to you. But I'd be awfully cautious about saying, well, somehow there's no impact to these projects when the fee was calculated exactly the same way as calculated on another project.
Great. We'll do it one more time. Anyone wishing to speak during the public hearing? Going once. Going twice. Anyone else? Seeing no one else, I'm going to close the public hearing. And we have this item coming up right away in the item G1. It's an ordinance to amend Chapter 92-9 of the Municipal Code pertaining to impact fees for the purpose, et cetera, et cetera. I believe I brought this forward, and I was at some of the urging of school administrators and discussions I had with the school board president and Ms. Liberta. And then, as I mentioned earlier, the former chairman of the Impact Fee Task Force, Bob Swindrowski, who appeared, who also did some research on the subject. I don't doubt what one iota that Mr. Ritter also served and did a fantastic job, as he usually does on the task force. The way I was seeing this issue is it's the school district itself that's going to be paying these fees. It's not people that are building homes. It's not developers that are paying it. It is actually the school district itself that is going to be writing the checks or has written the checks. And so when they do that, they're actually doing that by using revenue that's been derived from the taxpayers themselves. So what was brought to my attention, and I still believe in it, is I do see it as double taxation. I think, however, that given that Mr. Swindrowski had this discussion with Mr. Bill Milkey after all this, that discussion said something like, well, the law had been changed, and therefore what you wanted to do, you can't do. But then I read the write-up, and it appears that, in fact, we can waive the impact fees. But I guess the question I would have for the city attorney is there a prohibition from the council waiving the impact fees?
Mr. Mayor, I think you said the word waiver is probably a mischaracterization. It's just a policy choice under the local legislative authority of the Common Council as to whether or not public entity, such a taxing jurisdiction, should also be subject to impact fees. School districts are the only other governmental entities which are not already excluded under the impact fee ordinance in county, state, etc. And I don't know that double taxation is a proper characterization. I was there also at the impact fee needs assessment task forces back in the 1990s, and those were ultimately replaced by a consult somewhere around the year 2000, which created a different task force. That's where the automatic increase, et cetera, came from. And back in the 90s, what was adopted by the Common Council was a relatively flexible impact fee needs assessment, extremely less lengthy than what currently exists, but there was flexibility involved there in terms of what projects were to be considered in calculating the per new development impact fee that was to be imposed. Now, as I understand it, under the voluminous needs assessment, each and every future project that is contemplated is recorded within the needs assessment and creates this whole pie, which has a cost, and then that is prorated between costs ascertainable to resulting from new development as well as what existing development in the city would require. Under the old way, original way of doing it, there wasn't that dichotomy there. There were X number of dollars allocated for a rough estimate, a proper rough estimate of future land use needs resulting from new development, and that was utilized accordingly. So under the current method, there are dollar sign appropriated and ascertained projects across the board, and those are broken down into very specific categories. And as I understand it, the percentage prorations between here is the city cost for this type of public facility, and here is the new land development impact fee portion of that, and it literally comes down to hundredths of a percent, such as 47.06% of this $12 million future public improvement need is ascertained to impact fees. And then that gets divided out among guesstimates of how many new land developments there will be, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The reason I mention all of that is because when you speak in terms of double taxation and new school project costs, I'm understanding that the impact of public facility improvement needs for this project, this high school expansion project, are not even in the needs assessment. And with regard to the overall thick binder of calculations and prorations, schools, public school facility needs aren't even accounted. Well, and don't forget, public school facilities are not available as a chargeable cost for impact fees, but development resulting from creation of new schools is not calculated within the needs assessment. Mr. Liberto, who's got the whole thing memorized, can correct me if I'm wrong. So under those circumstances, one could argue that with regard to the cost of this school, it's irrelevant. Is it a charge? Yes. But it goes into the impact fee account to be used for all of these other future assorted development costs, not this project per se. So my bottom line, I'm re-researching this. City of Franklin was one of the first in the state of Wisconsin to impose impact fees. They were called development fees. City ended up in litigation because they included development fees for new schools, and that litigation was, some would say, end run by going to the legislature by others, the opposing party, and the impact fee statute was created, which prevented the imposition of impact fees for schools. The whole rationale behind impact fees is that new development should help to pay for itself, if not pay for itself, in terms of public facility needs. Existing taxpayers, resident taxpayers, should not have to pay for new streets, new parks, which are required because there's 40 new subdivisions that have just been developed. The new subdivisions should pay their own way. And the one problem when it comes to imposing impact fees on a public school is that, and the mayor mentioned earlier, it ultimately is taxpayer dollars. So while it is a new development and fits the definitions under the statute, the argument against charging public schools for new development with regard to impact fees is that it does filter down through the taxpayers. And some could argue the reverse of what Mr. Ritter said. It's not unfair to the people outside the Franklin School District. If it pertains to Franklin School District, it's unfair to the existing residents paying taxes within the Franklin Public School District because they're existing property owners and they're paying for new development. And the whole concept of impact fees is that new development pays its own way, not existing taxpayers. So there's no legal impediment either way. It's a judgment call. It's a policy decision.
I just, I said the school board president. We did have a conversation with the school board president, Mr. Laverta, and I, but the original issue, I think, actually was raised by the superintendent when you were presenting, looking at Mr. Laverta. The city was presenting him with, you need to pay X amount of dollars in impact fees.
Correct.
Remember that?
Yes.
And it was a substantial amount of money. I forgot exactly what it is, but it's probably hundreds of thousands of dollars.
No, it was less than that, but I did not bring the sheet with me. I know I emailed it to a document I had to Mr.
Yeah.
Ritter. So
I mean,
exactly.
I guess what I'm hearing from Mr. Ritter is you've got future development. Somebody wants to build a house, okay? And when you build a house, there's going to be an impact for on the community when you do that. And we collect impact fees to pay for playgrounds, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In this particular instance, the thing that gave rise to this was that the school district, the Franklin School District, was required by our ordinances to cut a check and to pay X amount of dollars to us for impact fees.
Correct.
Now, I would argue, what was the impact of that development on the community? You have the schools, you have homes that are built, you have businesses that are built that are going to require this and that and this. That school was already there. So what new development, what impact was that school bringing to the taxpayers of Franklin?
The report doesn't address a specific circumstance in or address the topic in that manner. It focuses on the logical perspective that the city attorney repeated, which was if we charge an impact fee to a school district that is then passing it on to all of the citizens that pay their property taxes.
Yeah, but that's not what gave rise. What gave rise to this was that we presented the superintendent with, this is the amount of impact fees, this is the check you have to pay. That's what gave rise to this. The larger picture about the development and the ordinances that gave rise to charging impact fees, I think it's part of this, but it's still separate. And I guess the other question is, it's too bad the superintendent isn't here. I could ask is, which pool of money did you use to pay for the impact fees that were charged by the city of Franklin? Where did you get that pool of money? Was that from the taxpayers, or was it from a different source? I would argue it's from the taxpayers. So in many respects, the taxpayers are paying for this.
My understanding from the conversations we had with the superintendent is that if the school district has to pay impact fees for this, then those costs they will need to account for in the budget of the program, or in the budget of the project that was the matter of the referendum.
Right. But
the they got the referendum money from the taxpayers. So the
yeah, I was going to say, because the Supervisor Patz, he's not paying for this. The school board members aren't paying for that bill. They're taking it out of money that's been collected by the taxpayers, and the taxpayers are paying for that impact payment. Right? Yeah. Alderman Taylor?
I guess I have some questions based on what Mr. Ritter brought up, or a couple comments, too, regarding two classes of citizens. We already do, actually, because you have people that live in the Oak Creek Franklin School District that aren't covered under the Parks and Rec Department because the city of Oak Creek pays, the city of Oak Creek taxpayers, the municipal side, pays for the Parks and Rec. And then in Franklin, it's the school district. That's where your money goes. So you have people in the Franklin Oak Creek School District, which I represent a lot of them, Alderman Wildum does too, that they don't fall under any category, and they pay a higher cost. So there's actually already another class of people based on those two ways of collecting money for Parks and Rec. To say that building a public school doesn't have an impact, who paid the sidewalk jack that's in front of the high school? Who paid for that? How was that paid for?
Barack Obama.
Yeah, stimulus. It's all stimulus money. But if it wouldn't have been stimulus money, who typically pays for sidewalks? City. So when things like that happen, it's the city of Franklin. It's this governing body that has to actually make those decisions, cuts into our budgets, and things like that. When you talk about the referendum question, Mr. Ritter is absolutely right. My district, you know, and the city as a whole barely passed it. If you look at those that are in the Oak Creek Franklin School District, if they know they're going to get an increase somehow in additional cost because of these impact fees not being covered by the school district, I'm guessing they would vote no. I'm guessing they vote no. And I mean, you know, it did pass. And then on top of that increase in your tax bill, the school board passed their additional tax increase. So more than 50% of my increase in taxes was school district related. So, you know, we have those concerns I hear from all the time. So my question would be, if we don't collect the impact fees from the school district, I mean, is it going to be passed on to the rest of the areas that are not in the Franklin School District? Because that, to me, is a big concern, considering I represent a big chunk of non-Franklin School District residents.
Slipper.
To answer that, I think it's most appropriate for me to back up just a little bit and point out that the original studies don't break things out by school districts. The state statutes for impact fees don't break things out by school districts. Our ordinance currently doesn't break things out by school district. So when you're looking at impact fees, if you're looking what is, I would argue, an irrelevant question, I would say the school district issue is irrelevant to the impact fee because it isn't any part of the impact fee debate. So when you, to back up to Mayor Taylor's last question, what was that impact of the school? How was that considered in the impact fees? The impact fee study that was originally done and any of the amendments don't point to impacts of schools, don't talk about it, don't address it. It talks about institutional zoning districts, which schools fall into. And so someone could say, see, they were supposed to pay. But in an institutional zoning district, you can also have lumber yards, hardware stores, nurseries, gift shop, funeral services, dance studios, theatrical production services, and healthcare services. And there's more in the list, too. So you need to make sure that that broader classification that a school would fit into had to be in there. So it made sense that the classification pays. But schools themselves weren't addressed. And I even went back and emailed Rupert Milkey to make sure that they hadn't planned on and anticipated in the revenue stream revenue from school districts, from school impacts. They had not. So when you say who's going to pay that if the schools don't, you're making a presumption that the school should, and it's an appropriate cost for the school. I imagine when the school district was putting their budget together for their project, they did not anticipate that they would have these costs. So presuming that the school should be paying makes it look like somebody else is picking up a cost that the school district should have had to. But if you recognize the impact fee statute and our local statute doesn't make that sort of distinction, then you get to look at, as a common council, just from the policy decision, is it appropriate for a school district to need to pay an impact fee? If they don't pay, if you want to say, well, boy, we could get some extra money from them if we charge them, if they don't pay, what's going to happen is exactly what the statute and our local ordinance and our study expects, is a periodic review of the amount being paid by new growth. And the rates will be adjusted now and in the future to ensure that new growth continues to pay that. So it doesn't get pushed.
So there's no harm. There's no harm done on other taxpayers. There's no harm in the Whitnall School District. There's no harm to those in the Franklin Creek School District if we don't? It's not like you're passing that dollar amount on to anyone else.
I believe that. The revenue stream anticipated in the project never anticipated a large revenue stream from school development as well. And so had this project never happened, our actions would have been the same as in the future. True, if we get, and I think the number was in the neighborhood of $100,000 spread out around the impact fees from the school district, that may reduce the burden on the other ones, but the impact fee ordinance never anticipated that. If that's not there, and so the same calculations have been done in the past will be done in the future, and the rates will be set accordingly for new growth. And that's why I believe the one portion that was referred to as irrelevant, I believe is one of the most relevant, and it's a foundation of the report, which is charging the school district an impact fee that they're getting the money to pay from property taxes effectively dilutes that impact fee being on just new growth, because the portion of school district taxes that's going to be paid back to us through an impact fee is pushed out to people who aren't causing the new growth.
Because that would be my concern, that it would be passed on to others. Because I'll tell you right now, I don't want to make it any more difficult for the school board. Because I'll tell you right now, based on the feedback I'm getting, you know, the voters voted on a referendum question, all right? And they expected to pay that amount. What they didn't expect is a tax increase on top of a referendum question when you have, like, the city of Franklin with a 0% levy increase, Milwaukee County with a 0% levy increase, when people are calling me and saying, well, you have decisions in both these two areas, why do my taxes go up? And you start explaining to people, take a look at the school district, and that's your biggest chunk. So they have a tough enough job explaining why they had an increase on top of a referendum question. I don't want to make it any more difficult for them to have to come up with another $100,000, especially the fact that it's not going to be passed on to the rest of the taxpayers, which is what it sounds like you're telling me. Right?
I believe so. Yes.
Okay, thanks.
Alderman Mayer?
The last major addition to the schools was the impact fee in existence then, 8 years ago-ish.
I'm not aware of what it was in the time.
Okay. Well, my point is, I guess, the last time they put out an addition, I believe the impact fee was in existence. So when I voted for the referendum in the election, I was voting for the bottom line of that expense, figuring that the school district did due diligence to put together a reasonable package of estimates, including any fees that they would have to pay. So in my mind, when I voted for that, the impact fees were included in that, and that was the bottom line. So if now the school district's not going to pay the impact fees, then that money is still there somewhere in that referendum money, and maybe we should give it back to the voters. If we're going to say we don't need it here, then let's give it back to the voters and not let the school district take it necessarily if they don't need it. But it was voted on. It was approved by the district, by the voters of the district for that bottom line, and all the fees should be included in there. And if it's not needed now, then it should be given back to the voters, back to the citizens.
Alderman Wong.
I heard Mark answer a question. His answer was, I believe so. It didn't sound 100% sure. I just listened to Alderman Mayer's comments about was it in the budget or not. I don't think we have an answer for that for sure. So to me, this item is not ripe for a vote because it doesn't have all the information. And I make a motion to table it until the next meeting so we can find out if the school district included impact fees in their budget, what the city uses. This is a part of the motion, but this is the reason why I made the motion to table it until next week, or the next council meeting, and what the city uses to calculate the impact fees on institutional areas and how that might have affected the school in the last time when they had an impact fee.
I'll second that for discussion.
Okay, just for clarity, what was the breakoff of the motion?
The motion just was to table it to the next council meeting to provide additional information.
Could I ask the maker of the motion for a favor, and that would be to also ask the staff to contact Mr. Bill Milkey regarding the conversation he may have had with Mr. Smondrowski. My understanding was that, based on that, what might be for us could or could not be legal. So, is that okay with us?
That's okay. And that under discussion, I just wanted to, I mean, I think Alderman Mayer brought up a very, you know, good point about the actual referendum question itself in terms of how they put it together. Were impact fees included? And I don't know if anybody in the audience, they probably don't have that answer. I don't blame them, but we should probably get that answer. I mean, I think it's very important that we do. Mark, I like what you're telling me, but I think just to make sure we know that it's 100% accurate, that it's not going to be pushed on to other, well, basically to the taxpayers that we represent. Because, you know, it's every time we do a budget, you know, the mayor puts it together. You know, he's done nine of these, or all, I think, nine budgets, and, I mean, six that I've been here, and, you know, we're asked to do the heavy lifting, and we hear from our taxpayers about controlling spending and cost and things like that, and so then we do. Last year's budget, I think, was a $20,000 increase, very, very minimum. This year's zero, yet tax bills go out. Because they have the City of Franklin logo on the top, we get the calls. We have to explain. And it gets very frustrating. So I want to make sure that decision that this body makes, that we know for sure that we're not going to, this body make the decision to put the burden on someone else to bail out the school district in this situation. So I'll support the motion so we can get a couple of those questions answered.
I guess just for clarity, this whole issue was raised by representatives of the school district.
Of course. I mean, that doesn't shock me. I mean, if I had a bill for $100,000 I didn't want to pay, I'd probably balk also. So it's not a shock that they're here asking for us to not do it.
Well, and I think all of us have sat on boards and commissions for months on end. I mean, I sat on the Tickner report where we had 16 meetings. Mr. Ritter, I think you were there too. If everybody can be on the same page after all 16 meetings and know, say exactly the same thing or their interpretation of what happened, that would be a miracle. So, anyhow, we have a motion on the floor. Madam Clerk, could you keep back the motion?
Alderman Wilhelm moved to table to the January 21st, 2014 Common Council meeting for further information an ordinance to amend Section 92-9 of the Franklin Municipal Code pertaining to impact fees for the purpose of exempting public schools from application of each of the various impact fees and to suspend for 2014 automatic annual rate increases for each of the various impact fee rates and further direct staff to contact Mr. Bill Milkey.
That's your motion?
Sure, that will work.
Second.
That is my second, yeah.
Perfect.
Perfect. That was well. She did a great job working for it.
I can't believe she does that. All right. Any further discussion on the motion? Ms. Liberty.
Just a question maybe for the city attorney. The second half, which we haven't really discussed that much, which is suspending the 2014, if the city attorney says we can bifurcate those, given that we've had the hearing, and if you wanted to approve that with the city attorney striking the appropriate portion of the ordinance so that it reflects only the one topic and bring the second back, there would be some administrative benefits to getting that done early in the year rather than later as far as addressing permits that have occurred
this
since January.
This is the increase we're talking about? This is, yeah.
So it's the portion that suspends the automatic 5% increase.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second that.
Oh, wait, did we vote on the first motion? No, I got to vote on it. I think we still have it. Come on. Right.
Well, the maker of the motion suggests maybe just striking the second part of the impact fee, and that will satisfy that. Just striking the 5% from the additional, from the first motion. So it will still say we're asking for information on the school. But
we'll delete
those.
Okay. And the second is okay. He's signaling with a thumbs up on that one. All right. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, Six ayes, no noes. I have it. Motion carries. Is there a
Do you need a motion?
Second motion?
You make need a motion to approve the ordinance in a matter as to be amended by the city attorney to retain the suspension of the 5% increase.
That's my motion.
2014.
Second.
All right. It's been moved and seconded. Madam Clerk, do you have the motion? All right. Any further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Yeah, I'm sitting up here going, this is great. This is democracy in action. It's really good debate. And why is this before us? Because I think this is the first time that there's been a major remodeling project of the schools, at least during all of our term.
Right.
It's just wonderful. Love it. Okay, resolution authorizing the assignment or transfer of the developer's rights and obligations under a development agreement for Hampton Inn and Suites, Milwaukee, Franklin to FF and E LLC. Mr. Eldridge is here. Mr. Eldridge did call me. I contacted the city attorney regarding the issue that's before you. My recollection is talking to the city attorney, it's one of those, yeah, we do this all the time, and it's not a big deal, so
move,
to speak.
Move to approve.
Second.
All right, there's a motion to approve. It's been seconded. Any further discussion? Yes.
It's not done all the time, but as the city engineer would indicate, the in effect 100% security under subdivision development agreements are provided by a letter of credit, and that is yet to be issued here. There's a closing with regard to the financing of this project set for tomorrow morning, and with regard to the agreement in recordable form to be prepared under one of the further resolve clauses, that has been done and shared with all the parties to this transfer transaction. So that being said, staff does recommend it.
Just another, Mr. Eldridge, we should give out medals for your bravery on the project.
Persistence.
And persistence.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for doing what you're doing. Greatly appreciate it. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, six ayes, no noes. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Let's see, where are we? Resolution opposition to 2013 Assembly Bill 522 requiring local municipalities to share payments in lieu of taxes received from tax-exempt entities with overlying taxation jurisdictions. I thought that the current legislation works for us as a municipality. I think that we need to take care of ourselves. When we projects come in, the brunt of the projects and the dollars that are spent is spent on planning staff, city engineering, surveying, consultant fees, et cetera, et cetera. This is just, sorry, it's first day on the job for you, State Representative Skronsky, but, you know, I just got to say, because as a chairman of the ICC, we keep seeing bills like this coming out of the state legislature from someplace unknown in the state that have no idea how Milwaukee County and big cities operate and how complex this whole area is. And, you know, somebody needs to say something up there. You don't have to continue to pass new bills to justify your positions. You know, it's like the Ten Commandments. We had those around for like 6,000 years. They seem to work. There's just one bill after another coming out to the point where mayors and aldermen and village trustees, you can't keep the county supervisors, you can't keep track of all of the stuff that's coming out of the state legislature. And then, who's bringing it forward?
Yeah.
Where did this come from? So that's why this is in front of me.
This is hilarious because Casper Green, we all know Casper, called me about a week and a half ago and said, we need to do something to make the state legislature part-time, like what they did at the county board, because they have all this time on their hands up there. And they keep on coming up with these ridiculous pieces of legislation, which is true. And I think this is the fourth time in the last 3 months that I've had a chance to say, there goes your local control. Once again, a Republican bill that the Republicans used to believe in local control. And once again, here they are. We had hotel tax. We had mining. Now this. It's just, they have nothing better to do.
The home rule. For
yeah, home rule, exactly. Residency. You know, they have nothing better to do in Madison than come up with just crazy legislation. And then you see favors for lobbying groups, organizations. Who was that? That Souter, and then he was going to take a job, and then he basically got run out of there. And that's where, you know, that's why Ken's here or there now, because Jeff Stone took a job to bail out the Walker administration on that one. So it's just one thing after another. So maybe Ken, when you're there, Mr. Representative, you can find out what these guys are doing. You know, maybe just join a little, have a little poker time or something with them, keep them busy, so they don't have to constantly come up with this kind of garbage. Because it really is getting frustrating. Where's this stuff coming from? They have no clue, you know, especially some of these northern or northwestern representatives or the far western. This is Schultz, so that's southwest. These people are really starting to become irritable. I'm getting irritated. I think the mayor is too. This is, like I said, seriously, this is like the fourth time in 3 months that this kind of crap is here. Where they have no clue what goes on, what municipalities do, and they want to meddle. That's all they're doing. I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
All in the roll call.
I just want to comment, I especially like the last whereas paragraph.
The what? I can't take credit for the wordsmithing. I'm sitting next to the greatest wordsmither in the history of the
That's good. It is good.
Oh, you? Yeah, that's what I meant. What for is that? Oh, well. We got a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Item 4, update on the state-required property reassessments, including geographic distribution, tax valuation increases. Alderman Wilhelm and Alderman Taylor. Alderman Taylor, Alderman Wilhelm?
I'll leave it to Alderman Wilhelm.
Alderman Wilhelm?
Well, you should have in front of you an email from one of my many constituents that contacted me and wanting to know more information about this particular person's increase in taxes. And I had asked for information about, was there any particular homes that held value? Was there any particular areas that held value? Were there any particular, I think I'm pretty aware of the areas that lost value. So I just wanted a better update and understanding for the council for answers back to constituents who had significant increases based on property assessments and how the city may or may not have been able to assist them with that.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned in the memo.
Could you
memo,
please state your name and address?
I'm sorry, Mark Link, city assessor. The last reassessment was in 2010. And the
can you hear him back there?
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Madam Clerk has to remind me of that from time to time. The assessor is guided by the Wisconsin Assessor's Manual and Wisconsin statutes. And when you're performing a revaluation or reassessment, the assessor is not looking at the prior values. The assessor is looking at what's taking place in the current market. Based on comparable properties that have sold. Different property types do perform differently. Natural changes in the marketplace take place over time for different property types. I've mentioned in the past condominiums have changed differently than typical single-family properties. Vacant land was impacted differently than improved-type properties. It's a little unique with the change that's taken place overall in the market in the last 5 years. Since the third quarter of 2008. So for the reassessment, we looked at sales that took place during calendar year 2011 and 2012. The effective assessment date is January 1, 2013. As part of that, the improved residential properties, we generate a sales comparison sheet for those properties with adjustments made for the differences in characteristics such as square feet of living area, bathrooms, finished basement, decks, et cetera. So there is some fluctuation in the percentage of increase and decrease between property types and neighborhoods that's solely based on the difference in the sales that are taking place in 2011 versus the sales that were taking place in 2008 and 2009, which is what was used for the last reassessment which was effective for January 1, 2010. Now, when we sent out the notices of assessment, we included instructions for property owners if they were in disagreement with the value, which is what the assessor deals with. If a property owner felt that the assessment was inaccurate, they had an opportunity to come and make an appointment with myself or assessment staff for us to explain how we arrived at the value and consider information that they may have to support their opinion of value.
Can you say that again a little bit louder?
Sure. It's called the open book period. When we mail out a notice of assessment, there's instructions that are included in that notice for property owners to contact the assessor's office, how to contact the assessor's office if they disagree with that value. That took place during the month of July of 2013. And if property owners were still in disagreement with the decision from open book, there's a formal process, which is called a board of review, which is a citizen panel, a little more formal than the open book. So the first thing that I would ask a property owner, besides the tax portion, is do you feel the assessment is fair based on what you can sell your property for in the open marketplace or a private sale? Because that's what the statutes define as uniform assessments. Constitution, Wisconsin Constitution, in Article 8 defines that as well. Property owners' uniformity is based on property owners paying taxes based on what they can sell their property for at private sale. And that was the objective of the reassessment. The factors or the methodology did not change from what we did in previous reassessments. It's simply based on what current market or current properties are selling for in the marketplace. I would invite, if you have a specific property owner, our office is always open where we can come in. The property owner may come in and I can give them their sales comparison sheet, show them the comparable sales that were used to arrive at the assessed value. They would have an opportunity to review those comparables.
Several of the residents did do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess for the record, what role does the city and the aldermen play in your assessment process?
In the process itself, none. And that's, by statute, it's the role of the assessor
mm-hmm.
to arrive at a market estimate of each value based on.
And
the
also,
are you
a city employee?
No, I'm a contracted assessor. We've been mm-hmm. involved with the city since 1992. In providing services.
I'm asking you this. I know the answers for
sure.
them. I'm asking you for the record.
No, I understand.
Do you recall how long your contract was for when it was the last time it was on?
It was renewed for January 1, 2013.
So I noticed when we were approving to do this reassessment, to go ahead with it, I didn't see any information that would have directed us to do something different or to know that people would see such drastic changes either in how low their taxes went or how high their taxes went. Would you now, looking back, have any other information that you feel we could have had that could have helped us with that?
Well, there's no way to predict what the tax impact is going to be on the assessments, as a result of the assessments because of the different taxing bodies. It's unknown when we arrive at our assessed values what the impact is going to be if there's a change in the school district tax, a city, county, and any property owner that has come in during the month of December to discuss their tax bill. One of the first things that we're explaining to them is the city portion, the levy didn't change. So we don't talk about the impact of taxes because it's an unknown item at the time that the assessments are established.
So how do you see someone who had a very small amount of increase in their value have such an increase in their taxes? What's the relationship other than with the school funds out of that?
Typically, if a property, for residential properties, if they didn't decline or decrease in value 9 or 10%, then there's going to be a little bit of a shift in the tax burden upwards. So a property that went down, let's say, 3 or 4% is going to be paying a little bit more proportionately than a property that decreased in value 10 or 15%.
Okay. I guess you've answered the questions that I've had, and I've certainly been directing people to come to your office and get those answers. Of course, I have people that aren't happy that they've lost so much value in their place, and I have people that aren't happy because they, with any increase, they saw an increase in their taxes. So do you foresee that shifting back at all? And where do you get, when you're compiling the data, are you going out and pulling the research off the real estate sales, or how do you get that information into you to make that? And can you partially right now predict if there's going to be a bounce back in either way when you get that?
Well, let me start with how we arrive at the sales data. We receive a sales transfer return for each transaction that takes place annually in the assessor's office. We review the information on the transfer return. We do what's called a sales validation process to ensure that it's what we call an open market valid transaction. Those are the basis of the assessed values. As far as the prediction goes, there have been some articles out there, and from what I've seen on the 2013 sales, that we could see be seeing maybe a 2% increase in value or recovery. But that subgroup of properties, condominiums, I haven't seen that recovery take place on that group of properties just yet.
Okay. Well, thank you for your information. It's been
Alderman
helpful.
Schmidt and then Alderman Taylor.
With the notice of the revaluation that was sent out in July, was there much reaction to that at the time, or was it it's like all of a sudden people didn't think about it until they got their tax bills, and it's like, well, I never, this one my constituent said, I never received that notice, but obviously it was long gone and forgotten.
Sure, yeah, and that does happen. The number of appeals that we received after this reassessment were down dramatically from the 2010 assessment, almost 75%. So after the reassessment during the informal appeal process, we spoke to around 150 property owners. In the previous reassessment, we spoke to over 600. And if you go back years into 2006 and 2002, we would normally speak to 1,000 or more property owners during the informal appeal process when assessments were increasing more dramatically.
Just so I can recognize, there's a person that wants to speak. We normally would have to suspend the regular order of business. What I might ask Mr. Link to do is, when we're done here, is for him to maybe meet with you or others that may have some questions that aren't being answered. Or the council can take up the suspension of the rules. But I first want to get the alderman's comments, and then I'll address people in the audience. Alderman Taylor?
I was just wondering, too. We had discussed one of my constituents last week. Did you receive a follow-up call from him at all this week?
I have not.
Alderman Taylor?
Thank you, Your Honor. I mean, the Alderman Wilhelm, you know, has this letter here. And I mean, this is the kind of stuff that I was mentioning before. You know, I just received my 2013 tax bill. To my astonishment, it went up $665, of which $335 is for the Franklin School District. Well, half of it, you know, that's what, and then we're getting these calls. Mm-hmm. One of the things, the condos really took a hit, didn't they?
They did.
I mean, they really, that's where, you know, for people that maybe stayed level, that money still has to be made up elsewhere. And so for a person, what was the average of about 9%, 9-10%?
No, for residential properties, 9 or 10%.
Right, so if a person stayed level, you're looking at a 9 or 10% roughly, right, increase.
It wouldn't be dollar for dollar proportionately. It would be somewhat less because you would have to weight it with
other
manufacturing.
Things, it would be a decent amount.
It would be a little bit of an increase if they stayed the same. Well, a little bit, substantial.
Well, mine stayed pretty much the same. And the mayor, he checked all of ours. He knows mine went up. You know, Mark's went up. Mine went up a good chunk. You know, I'm just like the person that sent the email. This email could have been sent from me to me. Because that's the kind of stuff that but the condos really took a dive, and some people had huge tax decreases because of it.
Yes,
and now their value is not worth very near what they paid.
From a property tax standpoint, it would have been a disservice not to perform a revaluation for that group of property owners, because for the last 2 to 3 years, they've been paying more than their fair share of the tax burden based on the value of their property, simply based on the change in the economy that's taken place since 2008. Nothing wrong with the previous assessments. Nothing wrong with the current assessments. They meet all of the guidelines in the assessor's manual, the statutes, the statistics that we have where a aggregate sales ratio when you compare the total assessed value to the total sale prices of properties that sold during calendar year 2012, that aggregate ratio was 99%.
Do we have to pretty much do this last year? Did we pretty much have to make this decision, could we put it off another year? I mean, don't we have to? Isn't when it gets to a certain point, aren't we pretty much mandated to have to do this? Were we there? Or?
Yeah. The statutes, statute 70.05, indicate that municipalities should do a reassessment every 5 years, mm-hmm. And if they fall plus or minus 10% of market value, there's a timeline that's put on there. The city has had a pretty standard policy of reassessing every 3 to 4 years. Based on the change in the marketplace that takes place in that time frame, both when the market was increasing at a great rate, if you at that time would have waited 5 or 6 years to do a reassessment, property owners would have received a notice of assessment with a 50 or 60% increase. So for the city, it's in the best interest, my belief anyway, it's in the best interest of the taxpayers to perform a reassessment every 3 to 4 years. So that you're able to capture more frequently these changes that take place in the
market. So we did it in 10, we did it in 13, so that was in correct. That was 3 years.
That was a 3 year.
3 years. Are we likely to do it, first off, are we likely to do it in 3 years again and the same way? Because this was different than the previous, the 2010 run. This was different, correct? We didn't do it, it wasn't as detailed. I know it was a lesser cost.
If I can answer your first question, right. Sure. Then we'll let Mark answer the second. All right. Because as director of administration in the 2013 budget, I was the one who recommended that we look at doing a revaluation for this year. And the reason I did that is because the people you're getting calls from now aren't the people we were hearing from and assessing and things a year ago when we suggested it should be done in 2013. It was all those people who were coming and saying, my property isn't worth anywhere near this. You need to do a revaluation. Our property values are down. We were still, just coming out of that recession, if you believe we're out of it already. But markets were greatly impacted. And so that was seeing that there had been a significant difference in the market from when we did it in 2010 to 2013. Is why I recommended it. And that sort of feeds into the second half of your question that Mark will answer. But being that we had done it within 3 years and did the other version that we've historically done, the state provides for your ability to do a quicker one, which did, in fact, save the city over $60,000, I think $50,000 to $60,000. From the one where you send somebody out and you view every house from the street. And Mark can explain the technical name and process he used.
Sure. And just before I get to that, let me point out that if there had not been a reassessment or revaluation for January 1, 2013, in 2012, the level of assessment that was on the tax bill was 104% or so. Without performing the reassessment, that figure would have climbed to 109 to 110%.
Where you'd have to.
Well, where you would have had to. And besides that, when people receive their tax bill and see the assessment level of 109%, you get a whole other slew of questions from that. The nature of the reassessment was called what's called an interim market update. We felt that we could take advantage of our previous drives through the city over the past 20 years. And take advantage of the data that we have on file and save the expense of the exterior drives and still perform well in the reval. And our statistics indicate that we did. So what's lost by not driving the full city is capturing properties that might have remodeled their property without a permit, properties that might have declined more than others in the past 3 or 4 years. That's what's lost. But, again, the methodology, the characteristics and so forth, that all stayed the same.
And one last question. You have that a chart here with the breakdowns of greater than, less than. Mark, you put that together?
Yeah.
So when it says non-condo, so it says 8,366. Is that the number of households we have in
yeah, that
the city?
Yeah, that includes duplexes, and all of that excludes what we tried to take out of that so it didn't skew the data were the parcel splits, new parcels.
Right.
And
so that includes duplexes?
Yeah.
And then the 2601 for condos, is
that's
that the units?
The number of
actual individual.
Yeah.
Like
that have individual
unit G,
parcel numbers.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. Okay.
Yeah. So if I can sort of take a segue into that since you brought it up, because the second half of the agenda item title addressed that the distribution evaluation increases. So Mark explained how it happened and what factors he go into the revaluation. I wasn't sure I was going to be able to get it completed for today, so I have a copy on the table and one posted on the board. It obviously, for today's discussion, it's going to be too hard to be very clear on the map, but this is I'll explain just sort of in general what it is. I have one correction typo to correct tomorrow, and then I can send this out as a PDF. And if you want it made available on the
city's website,
we can do that as well. And as a PDF, it is clear enough that you can actually use your PDF viewer and zoom in on individual parcels if you wanted. So it functions very well in a PDF form because of the size that we do it. I'm just going to point out by coming over to it a little bit what you'll see. And basically, we've taken the same parcels that show in the non-condo section and broke it out into the same six categories that you see on the table. We sort of drew a line here in the middle at that 9%. So the people above the line and the colors that you'll see, a green, a light blue, and a dark blue, basically those people who, the areas where the property value fell more than the 9%. The ones above is where their property value didn't go down that much and even went up as the colors get darker in the...
I mean the bottom side.
The bottom yeah. Half. So if you then look at the map, then what you'll be able to look at the sort of tendencies of color and see what areas tended to hold their value. You can see, I'll circle some here, this southeast portion of town did, as did the northeast. You see a considerable amount of the oranges, the orange shades.
So they were closer to maintaining their level.
Yes.
The previous assessment.
And that's one reason I put this table, so that you could see how it was spread in the community, but you could also see the distribution. Because although you have received calls from people, 60% of the parcels, if you look at the total column and add the ones where it went down, around 60% of the parcels fall below that 9%.
So there's a good chance their taxes may have gone down or stayed even.
Correct.
That's 60%, but then the R40, theirs went up. And those are the calls that, like,
yeah.
If those
parcels then are seeing that shift that is
right.
Was a demand of the marketplace, a result of the actual sales in the marketplace.
That document that you... you can provide each one of us one of those.
Yeah.
Once they're
what I'll do is, since it's probably the easiest way, is for me to put a large map like this in the alderman's room.
Oh, yeah.
But then the PDF I can send
you,
and it's
yeah.
Very viewable, very zoomable.
Okay, great. That's
I just want to address that because the gentleman keeps raising his hand.
I'll make the motion to suspend the regular order of business, allow him to speak.
Or are there others here on the same subject matter?
No, most other people either had it resolved, talked to me on phone, or couldn't make it.
All right. And your name, sir?
Do we need a...
Well, I just want to make so we're suspending it for this individual.
Gerald Kopchinski, 3957.
Just 1 second. Is there a second to suspension
second.
Of the rules? It's been moved, seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. If you could, please state your name and address for the record.
Gerald Kopchinski, 3957 West Madison Boulevard. I've lived in this city for 22 years, 8 March. And this is the highest increase I've ever got. However you arrived at it, it's a tremendous burden. You're looking at $631 compared to a year. And you send out, we got tax freezes, and you open up the bill, and all of a sudden you get $631 more. I mean, I don't go with all the other stuff that goes on, and how you arrived at it, but $631 on somebody that's retired is $631, $52 a month, and a lot of my neighbors are not happy. However you arrived at it, cuts need to be made someplace. I understand that you're not the whole tax bill, but that's the highest increase I've had since I've lived in the city. I've not lived here for a year, 2 years, 5 years. We're looking at a large portion of my adult life. I'm not happy.
Well, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Is there a motion to return to regular business? Is there a second? It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Alderman Wilhelm?
Well, just to address that, it wasn't the city who controlled the real estate market. The real estate, you heard from our assessor, who is not an employee, that the aldermen are not involved in the assessment process. We are not able to give any input. It's against the law. So he puts that together as a contract employee based on sales. I ask him how the information is given to him. He says that every time a sale is done, it's recorded with the city. So I wish I had control over the real estate market, because I'd be in a better position as well. But It's just the way the market is, and I'm not sure if anyone here has any ideas on how the city could have changed that. As far as up here, I'd like to hear about it. But so far, no one has given any indication that there's anything as the elected people up here could have done to change those results.
Okay. Alderman Taylor, and then Alderman Dandrea.
Thank you, Your Honor. On top, to follow what Alderman Wilhelm just said, I mean, we weren't responsible for the crash of the economy in 2008 when, we talked about up here when John McCain said, hold on, I'm not going to campaign for a while. We got a real problem. I need to go back to D.C. That's not our fault, all right, what's happened with the housing market. And I think all six of us up here, the mayor, so seven of us, all the city staff, employees, should be able to hang their hat on the job that they've done to put together a budget that was zero levy. When we have, I believe, the second lowest tax rate of any community in Milwaukee County for the city of Franklin. I think that's the village of Whitefish Bay, I believe, was the number one. So we're doing our job. We can't control other taxing authorities. There's six of them. And, I guess I have a say on one of them. But that was 0% also. That was 0% as well. But
nice try.
You got me there. That was good. But I think we all should be proud of the job that we've done. And, any criticism shouldn't be directed at any of the seven of us that put our names on ballots, because we did our job. And we can't control the housing market. And for the gentleman, I totally agree with you. I mean, mine went up $543. And I have a say in two of the six of them. So, was I happy about that? No, not at all. Not at all. But I have to deal with it. So if yours is $52 a month, do the math. What's 543 divided by 6? 40-something? Yeah. So I have to pay that. So come, I pay my tax bill with my escrow, or I will at least this week. And then I'll have to come up with the difference between now and, May 31st? So, I understand what you're saying, but please don't point fingers at this body.
Alderman Dandrea?
I had an opportunity before I became alderman to serve on the Board of Review, and to kind of support where Mark was coming from. People that attended these meetings, or let's say raised questions in a rising value market, a lot of people attended these meetings and were complaining of the increased valuations of the properties. And then I think people got confused when they saw that the reassessment that we did, the values came down, so they made assumptions. And I really paying attention to what the averages were, because I mean, it was just my house in particular went down maybe 6%. So I already knew in the back of my mind that my taxes were going to go up, okay, because I knew what the average was going to be. And everybody knows and understands that with a reassessment, the tax mill rate that the city is going to charge, if we keep our costs flat, in which we did, there was going to be an increase, and it was going to be passed on to the people that had a decrease or a slight increase of, I would say more of a decrease of less than the 9 to 10% that was the average. There was a question raised in regards to what can we do for the future. Hey, we're going to have a tough responsibility for the board here to keep our costs down, because as Mark alluded to, there may be a 2% increase in the valuation of property in this upcoming year, and granted, we're not going to be in a reassessment, but if that trend continues, we're going to see an increase in assessment. And even if we keep our costs flat, your taxes are going to go up. Now, as it was alluded to, there's a lot of other taxing authorities out there. I think all the citizens better get on board and start attending the school board meetings where they believe that they can continue to pass larger than expected increases. Granted, the referendum is one thing, but having these increases passed down by the school board, it's the reluctance of the citizens of this community to attend these open meetings to start to voice their opinion. The city can do one thing, but there's another taxing authority that taxes a lot on these homeowners, and it's a school district.
Okay, anyone else want to speak?
I'll make it very brief. Okay. Just since when you receive this and the table and this map, as you look at it, I'll just point out it has some odd breakouts of the categories, and that's just because I centered them around the 9% average. So we'd have three above and three below. The two light colors, one on either side, is 5 percentage points away from average. Then there's 10%, an additional 10%, and then everybody else. So you don't have too many colors, but that's why it has odd numbers like 9 and 14 and stuff, because we wanted to break the colors right on that average.
Yeah, it's just to put my two cents in. Nobody's happy. My taxes only went up $5, but they went up. Had it not been for the referendum question on the school district, my taxes probably would have went down. However, we do live in a society where when the majority rules, that's supposed to be the end of the discussion. And 51-52% of the people in this municipality that went out and voted for, in essence, a major tax increase. And these are all adults. Everybody that was qualified to vote in that did so, and their eyes were wide open. There were, I don't know how many public hearings, how many public meetings held at the school district regarding the scope of the projects. And so are people surprised that their taxes went up? Probably, because a number of people have told me that they thought that it was going to be an advisory referendum. They didn't really realize that it was a binding referendum, which goes to they weren't informed, and they didn't make themselves informed on the issue. You know, that's the biggest portion. But, I mean, democracy was used. People voted. They were informed. Things were thrown out in the flyer. In fact, we put things out in our newsletter indicating these public hearings. So, but I can understand, sir, all the people in Franklin. When you get a tax bill like that, I would be down here, and maybe I will in May, on the microphone if I got a tax bill like you got. It's shocking. So, and I've had, there's just so you know, there are other people in the city that have approached me regarding this, and I asked them, have you looked at your taxes? Have you looked at the portion of Milwaukee County and MATC and all that? And, of course, they say no. We get the distinct privilege of being able to collect the taxes for everybody. So therefore, I get this all the time. They think that the mayor is in charge of the school district and the county and MATC, and we are not. We try and collect taxes, pay the bills, pay for the employee salaries, et cetera, et cetera. And this body passed a budget that was 0% tax levy increase. We did not have to go that low. Under state law, we could have raised the taxes by that new construction, but this body chose not to do that. So, but I don't blame you a bit for being upset at all. And I think you did the right thing coming down here and voicing your opinion.
When you look at the requirements of the state constitution as to assessments and how taxes are distributed, it creates a very interesting sort of irony in how it plays out when you look at nobody's happy, because you end up with nobody's happy and everybody's happy. If you look at your major life's investment, probably is your home, and it keeps its value. The market is going around everybody else, but your house created value, you're happy, and then you get your tax bill, and you have a bigger share of the tax burden, and now you're unhappy.
Yeah.
But those people who are in a home and are now making payments that they're under on because their house isn't saving the value, they're very unhappy with the market. Then they get their tax bill, and they're happy because their taxes are down. And that's the end result of the process that's built right into the state's constitution as far as the distribution of the property taxes being directly attributed to the value of those properties in the market.
Mr. Link, I just want to put a couple rumors to bed after 15 years with you. You don't own a black helicopter, and you drive around in the helicopter and spot out people that you hate.
No, I do not.
The assessment. That's, you know, I mean, there really are people in the community that think that there are people on staff, and by the way, you're not on staff. You're a hired gun, and we do that on purpose so we don't have employees that would have any relationships with the taxpayers. We want somebody that's unbiased and neutral. But
many?
I mean, there's a lot of people that think that you have a number of people on staff that intentionally go out and, well, they want to settle a feud with this guy or they want to settle a feud with that guy, and so they're gonna reassess their home way out of touch, or it's not real, it's not part of the market.
It's a totally unbiased opinion of value.
Okay, but I am correct. But you don't have a black.
You are correct.
Cool. How many the company you work for? How many municipalities do you do?
Yeah, we're in 11 municipalities
in the state of Wisconsin.
Correct. Yes. Well, we're national.
A national company.
Right.
Though,
that's
but
correct.
In 11 in the state of Wisconsin.
Correct.
Thank you.
You know, as long as this is all for discussion, just to jump on what Mark had said about taxes and looking at government and tightening the belt and all that, for the next few months, I still chair the ICC's Committee on Shared Services. And we've been meeting with the Public Policy Forum for over 2 years with all the municipalities, Milwaukee County, including Milwaukee County, has representatives on there, to look at ways to combine services, to do consolidation efforts, to look at how we might be able to partner with individuals like Milwaukee County or the state of Wisconsin or whatever, because all of us know that this thing was coming. And you just have to do business smarter and better and cheaper and more like the private sector. And I think that time is going to arrive very shortly. The good news is, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of plans have been researched and looked at, and discussions have been held. So hopefully we will not have to make decisions in a time of crisis. A lot of these plans have already been looked at and researched.
If I could, just a couple of quick items. This the methodology that's used, we actually won an international award by the International Association of Assessor's Offices in 1992 with the software that the city owns. And then myself, I was invited by the Assessor's Institute to do a seminar on how to do what we just did here in the city of Franklin. So the experts in the field are asking us to show them the way on how to do this procedure. So it goes to speak for the further speak on the validity of the assessments. And then lastly, the appeal process for assessments is an annual process, and the assessor's door is always open. Any property owner that feels that they can't sell their property for the amount that we haven't assessed at, we have a form that's called a request for assessment review. They can call the office, or it's available online at the assessor's page, and we can review their assessed value for 2014.
Okay. Well, this was for discussion purposes. So with that, thank you very much.
Mr. Wink, would you meet with this
gentleman? Oh, sure, absolutely.
And,
sure, we'll step right outside.
Okay. All right, let's turn to the next
item. Thank you.
I believe it's Alderman Taylor's item.
Thank you, Your Honor. Last 2 weeks ago, we had a little bit of a discussion, and I believe we had a few aldermen have some concerns. I believe they were addressed in that discussion, but it was still a good idea, I think, to table it for a couple weeks just to have any time to talk to staff to see if there's any changes. But obviously, it's an issue where we all have these in our district. We have homes that are foreclosed upon that are starting to become at times dilapidated. People bust windows. It looks unsightly. The neighbors don't like it. You get the calls. And this is just another way of giving staff some tools to handle it so these homes can look presentable.
Just for the record, Alderman Wilhelm just stepped down for a few minutes.
So I'll make a motion to adopt an ordinance to amend the municipal code to provide for the prevention of blight created by the boarding up of windows upon unoccupied dwelling structures as amended by adding frame and or before the word sash in section 2 of the ordinance.
Second.
I move and second today for discussion. Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, 5 ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Now turn to item 6, authorization to accept a grant from American Transmission Company, LLC.
So move.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Mr. Liberto.
I would just like to note that I believe Jerry Schaefer should be acknowledged for identifying and going out and seeking this grant and finding it. It saves taxpayer money and addresses a problem that we're putting money toward as a city. So
yeah, and he's doing a pretty good job on those streets out there, too. So,
that's
got to be one of the worst snow seasons ever for the temperatures.
So what happens from there, then? Does he get something in his file then, or some kind of a letter of recognition or something?
I think he should.
It's that thick already.
Does a fine job.
Because I mean, it's one thing to say that here, but I think you should really get something for it. You know, for seeking the
letter of commendation. I'd be willing to do that.
Well, Ms. Prusser answered, won't get more snowfall.
It's a great idea. We should do that all the time.
I agree. I think we should. I mean, it's nice that we say it here, do it publicly. But he should have something in his hand or in his file as well.
Good to say
for
thank
the record,
you for
Mayor,
a great job.
I forwarded that grant to for them.
And Alderman Wilhelm gets a letter in her file of accommodation.
No, I'm pleased that he moved forward with applying for it. You know, whenever I see things that I think will benefit, and I saw this one and I thought it might be a good fit. So.
Okay. Thank you. We have a motion on the floor. Seconded. Would you vote on this yet? No.
No.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. A report on tax incremental financing district results for calendar year 2013.
Let's do 8.
Did we do
8?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. Finance Committee recommendation on South 76th Street and Ryan Road sewer project financing.
We need to say
7. Who said 8?
That's okay. You can skip
1. On 7.
We just did 6.
No, okay. 7.
And Alderman Wilhelm's back.
Okay, now where's the paper? Project update and staff direction to prepare a public informational meeting related to the easterly extension of West Evergreen Street east of South 51st Street and proposed Pleasant View Park. Is there a motion?
Mm-hmm. I'd like some discussion on this first. I asked this to be placed on the agenda because the project is moving forward, but I'm not sure that everyone up here is aware of the project. And I had a lot of constituents that had misconceptions about where would the water go, are they going to be using our stormwater basin, and where are people going to park, and so I I wanted to put together a public informational meeting, but I was told that in order to get staff assistance, I had to bring it to the council. So that is why it's here. I would like to say that we need to be sure that the same standards apply for staff assistance work that takes place without council approval on all projects. For example, the assessment document that Mr. Liberta put together and was posted on the website was not voted on by this council or approved by this council, and had I had seen that, I might have had a little problem with you didn't pay your fair share of assessments language that was taken from the states or wherever you took that language from. But I'm just saying there seems to be a misunderstanding on when we can ask for staff assistance and they can do something we request, or when they just take it upon themselves without council action. So this is one of these that I wanted to make sure we did have council direction on. One of the, if you look at the map that's within on page 59, you'll see that it crosses across what's known as the Patricas property, and this was part of the property that was kind of a trade-off. I couldn't get Marquette Avenue through unless I also agreed to assist with the southern portion of negotiation on this property for the parkland. This road has been delineated, as you can see, goes on to the city parkland, which was purchased somewhere around 1998 with no access to the park. So right now we have a road going in with a cul-de-sac, and I sit on the Park Commission. The Park Commission had made a recommendation to the council that the parking lot be put in. So I guess my question to the council is does this body want to build a road with a cul-de-sac to the end of the property, which serves no purpose, and then rip it up when the Park Commission wants to put the parking lot in, or would we rather do this project right for the first time and not create what I see could be creating a safety issue? I don't know what the entire length of this street is, but you have 60 feet. Mr. Bennett, do you know what the length of this entire from the end of Evergreen is?
I think it's 400-some.
Okay, so 400-some amount of feet. Do you know what the length from the end of there, Evergreen Court, is?
No.
Because our ordinance has a emergency access dead end of 800 feet. So if we put in this road, are we going over that 800 feet ordinance is a question. And should we be creating something where we're having a narrow, if you look at the Evergreen Court way over in the pink, notice how the road narrows down, which I think is a great thing. But if you're going to put this into a park, and now we have the trail over there, and not put in a parking lot, where are the cars going to end up parking? They're going to end up parking in front of the homes on Evergreen because there's nowhere to park to get to the park. People want to drive there and go walk their dogs on the trail that was put in. They're going to be parking in front of these people's houses because there's no parking lot. So I realize we have a tremendous amount of impact fees that are due. And I guess I think we should be assessing the fact, given the fact the Park Commission has recommended this. A park has been promised back here since they took the 3rd District baseball park out back before I was even involved in city politics, probably about the year 2000 when they removed the park from baseball park and promised this to be their baseball park, and the people are still waiting for that. The same people that have paid these impact fees that we were talking about in item G1. Now, they've paid, you know, thousands of dollars in impact fees, and they're going to end up with a long cul-de-sac and no parking lot. So what is the possibility of, instead of putting in a cul-de-sac and ripping it up, just putting in the parking lot? That's been proposed here for years. So we actually have access and a place to park rather than creating an emergency situation where it's beyond what the code is. I believe it'll be beyond what the code allows for a dead-end cul-de-sac. So,
is there an answer to that question?
Code is for subdivisions. It's not a
The code is
subdivision development portion of the code. So.
Well, if it had this road been put in when these homes on Evergreen, it still would be. It's still affecting a subdivision. It's affecting all the people on Evergreen. You're going to put in a road that's too narrow for people to park on. No parking lot at the end, and a park that's at the end, and the only parking is available is in front of their homes. And then if you have emergency access come in, then you've got people parked in front of their homes when they should be parking down in the parking lot by the park.
I went to the Park Commission at the beginning of last year when we started working on this, asking if they wanted a parking lot. At that time, they said no, they didn't want a parking lot. We sure can put it in, and I understand maybe they have changed their minds and
absolutely
they want to spend this money, so be no problem about putting a parking lot. We will have to do the street is short enough that we can get it under a half acre, so we don't have to do stormwater management.
Get closer to the microphone.
But we would have to do stormwater management anyway sometime, so we could put the parking lot in, and we could have that as part of a project. Maybe if you're going to put a parking lot in, you might want to do something with the park too, because you're going to build a parking lot and a road, and there's no facilities there.
Well, the Parks Commission is an advisory body. They have no ability to spend any money or to direct staff to do anything other than to bring it to the council, the council's eventual approval. Has that happened?
No.
Okay.
I just asked them if they wanted us to put a turnaround or a...
So the council has not moved to approve one penny for this road project?
Well, it's in the budget, but no, they haven't approved any expenditures.
So it hasn't been approved?
No.
I mean, if the council didn't want to put this through, they didn't have to vote for it.
Beg your pardon?
If the council did not want this street to go through, they would not. They don't have to vote for it.
That's right.
Okay. Taylor? Thank you, Your Honor. You know, if there's a proposal what the Parks Commission wants to do, I have no problem in coming here and letting us make that decision, but, you know, that's not before us. I think the only thing I'll add to this conversation is I remember when we were talking about Marquette, it kept on, you know, Alderman Solomon would say, you know, I don't want to build something just to rip it out, you mm-hmm. know? And mm-hmm. so I definitely don't want to, I think, put a little cul-de-sac just to rip it out a few years later. So I think from my vantage point, I wouldn't support that end of the road. I would like to see probably a parking lot because that's ultimately what's going to be there. And if this is the plan is, I mean, is this in the budget to do this portion or no? Not yet. This is
my
all still.
My understanding, there is money in the budget to do this portion under the capital expenditure budget. I also understand that there's money been put in the budget for some park development in this area. I wasn't a part of that, but
so okay. So I mean, I would say that, you know, building that road has been discussed. I do recall that was like a trade-off. Let's get that done, the southern portion and the northern portion, and that's where we're at now. If you know, this body needs to make a decision on parking lot or cul-de-sac, I think we should. I think it'd be foolish to spend money and then in a very short period of time rip it out. I don't think any one of us wants to do that. But ultimately, none of us have made a decision on what is going to be in that park, and so I don't think we should. That's even is germane to this topic. I think all that's germane is this road and I'll leave that there.
Neighborhood meeting.
Yeah, neighborhood meeting and
staff to
and have staff work with the alderman, and I think that's what should be done.
Yeah. Alderman Skransky.
Yeah, I think this is too premature. There's not enough facts here to make a decision on, and as far as I'm concerned, if you're going to put a road into a future, you should have a parking lot on the end of it, but I just think this is too premature. There's not enough facts here for us to make a decision. I'm not going to vote.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Well, the council members up here should know that previous action by this council did allow Mr. Bennett to move forward with this road, and that's mm-hmm. what he's doing. And I was a little bit surprised on that because I thought, well, he's doing things that I didn't think the council, and I went back and I looked at the minutes and I asked Lisa to pull the minutes for me, and I reviewed them, And I believed when I read it, there was enough information for Mr. Bennett to move forward with this road. My problem was it was moving forward without the residents knowing much about it and without the council knowing much about it. He's had wetland delineations done, all kinds of things done, and I don't think this council even knew was happening. So I brought it back here so you could be informed, although I think Mr. Bennett had the authority to do what he's doing on this. So if there are people that feel there's not enough information, maybe we have to go back and review some of the other items. My only concern was spending money to rip it up and when we could possibly look at it. So I did have the project update, so I believe you've been updated on how far the project is moving along. And I also had the for the informational meeting, but if you look through the council action, it says staff has prepared the attached preliminary road layout for council update on the project, which may result in probable residential lots for future development as the road extension. And I think that's important for the people to know that. So in addition to that, I think that with the Park Commission, I talked to the chairman of the Park Commission. He said yes, he definitely believes that it was a recommendation. I think it was when Finance Officer Paul was there. He was talking to the commission about this excessive amount of impact fees that it might be a problem for the city in the future. And that's when the Park Commission made the recommendation to start using some of those fees to get some of these projects done. I don't know where or how that, why it never got carried to the council.
Yeah, I mean,
so I guess instead of authorizing just for the informational meeting, I'll use the or other action as the council deems appropriate, and I'll authorize.
Could you make the full motion? Because no. I've got something.
Authorize staff to work with the area alderperson to set up an informational meeting with the area residents abutting the existing West Evergreen Street for the selected date in February, and to include staff review for installation of the parking lot along with the project, and to seek funding sources to address the parking lot.
Okay. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, other discussion, Alderman Schmidt?
Sounds like we're getting a lot further along with this. From what I read from the action sheet, it was we've gotten the update on what the standing of the situation is, and it was to set up an informal meeting, so I was just going to move to the question of, going to have a public meeting with the residents there to determine what they want. And that's what we were scheduled to vote on, but if you have a longer motion, fine.
I guess I would just say that I brought some things forward in the past during the budget process about making some policy decisions, and the council, I think appropriately so, said, let's wait till the next council's in and the next mayor. I don't know who the next, it could be Steve or Basil, I guess, or who the aldermen are going to be, but this is not a small project. And I know Saints, the road for Saints James by Claire Meadows was about $880,000, and this road seems to be a lot longer.
That's a lot.
A lot less than that, okay. But still, you're in the hundreds of thousands of dollars, right? And while the Parks Commission has recommended that impact fees be used, that got into the budget, the Parks Commission does not have authority to spend one dime of the impact fees. So, Alderman Taylor and Alderman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Jack, did we give you authorization and the money's there to build this road?
You gave me authorization to purchase the land.
Right.
And that was brought to the council, and we really have started working on the design, and one of the design things is the wetland issue. So mm-hmm. we've requested that sewer pack. Or planning, I should say, has requested that sewer pack delineate the wetlands, because that's kind of the next step to do. And then we will come to the council with a plan, and the council will authorize going out for bids for the road.
So then I would, so then, so far what you've done is what you've been told, what we've authorized you to do.
Yes.
So I don't think there's anything wrong having a meeting with the neighbors and things like that. I'm not sure what the timing should be to have it now or whenever, but we're willing to have it now. But I would imagine that a part of that conversation or part of, you know, before we go too far, we should, this body needs to make a decision on a parking lot or not. What happens in the park, that I think the mayor's right, that's way too early to determine what's going to be in that area. But I think if we're have already basically said as a body, this road needs to be built. I really think we have to make a decision on what the end of the road should be sooner than later. So that can be done this summer. Other than anything else of what's in the park does not need to happen right now. That's a whole separate issue because the train's kind of leaving the station on the road. We do need to determine what the end of it should look like. So as long as this meeting accomplishes, or at least has, or some, this body needs to make a decision by when, I guess, is to what we should.
But this meeting will be new. This would be an informal meeting. It would be the open house type of meeting. To communicate back with you, we would have comment sheets that they would fill out. And then the elected officials would get a copy of the comment sheets. It would go back, and from that, then you'd give direction to staff what to do.
Then I would say that.
I mean, that's normally.
Right. Then I would say that. I guess that happens, would be my thought. I don't have a problem with that. But then once those comment cards come in, then I think we should need to decide the end of a road. That's not political. It's either a sidewalk or a culvert. But we need to decide. And so this way this road gets done this summer. We're not sitting here trying to cram something in at the end of next, you know, end of this year like we did with the trail.
That would be open to the public?
Yes, we would send out the notice to the people on Evergreen Street. Beyond that, we normally don't notice it.
Right.
Alderman, other interested parties.
And we can allow the, you know, we should let the mayor and the elected officials know, put them on the list, plus the probably the plan commission, the Board of Public Works, and the
parks.
And the parks and the streets. Street committee.
Alderman Wilhelm, and then was it Alderman Skransky?
I want to make it clear that the park commission had no intentions of saying that they had authority to spend any money. I heard that said a couple times. I'm just letting the council know that the park commission did say that if we're going to put the road in, it would be wise to do the parking lot, and they were making that recommendation to the council. Why that recommendation never reached the council is unclear to me, but there was a recommendation from them based on the impact fees. And I did talk to the chairman, and he said he agreed that that's, you remember, that's what happened. I don't really have any particular time frame on this road going in. It wasn't something that was a big big push for me, but if we do it, I think that not putting in the parking lot is the wrong way to go. And if there is no, we have to hurry up and get it done, we have plenty of time to get it back to the council with the design of the parking lot, make sure the financing is there so we're not pinching our budget and all of that. And that's what I think the direction should be, is the informational meeting and then the direction to staff to continue to look at the design of this, since we really haven't looked at the design before. So it's not jumping ahead of anything. This is the process of how you do it.
Kind of going back to what Alderman D'Andrea said, maybe you don't want to do it at all in a few months. Alderman Skransky.
Jack, when you started your conversation, you said, did we purchase the land or are you going out to purchase the land?
We have purchased the land.
You have purchased the land.
Council has authorized the purchase of the land. We actually purchased it through the power of eminent domain.
Okay, so we do own the property.
At the same time, really, we were buying the land for Marquette Avenue. The same person that half Marquette Avenue was purchased from, what we purchased this from.
Okay. So we do own the land, and I agree. I don't think this thing is complete of where we're going with it. I think there's a lot to be discussed, and I think have a public hearing with the residents around there, find out, get their input, and by all means, if you're going to put a street in, you got to put a parking lot in there.
Yeah.
I mean, otherwise, we're just screwing around, spending money and doing nothing.
Okay, we got a motion on the floor. It's been seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries.
It's a lot longer than I thought we'd be here tonight.
Is there a national championship?
No, that was last time. But there is Michigan State Ohio State basketball game.
Okay, I'm just gonna take a chance and say eight.
Yes.
Finance committee recommendation on South 76th Street and West Ryan Road sewer project.
So moved.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries.
Yeah, that's.
Madam Clerk, you would like a more precise motion?
I guess I'm wondering if it is the recommended motion. You just moved, and I don't know what you moved.
It says as the council deems appropriate.
But I don't know what he thinks is appropriate.
Who made the motion?
What he thinks is appropriate, it may not be what I think.
I'm following the recommendation.
Yeah, we want the names and
addresses. Yeah, my motion was for the recommendation, to follow the Finance Committee's recommendation.
Okay, who was the second?
That was the
motion is to follow the recommendations of the Finance Committee.
Yes.
And Alderman Wilhelm.
And before we voted on that, I wanted to say, could someone tell me what that recommendation says? Because I read it three times, and it doesn't make any sense to me.
Who wrote this up?
Paul.
All right, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, I just have a motion carries.
Are we going to?
We did a second aye.
Yeah.
Item G9, Board on Tax.
Mayor, I'm going to abstain from that because I don't understand what the motion is.
Okay. Let the record reflect five ayes, no noes, and one abstention.
And I guess I'll get with Paul afterward to find out what we voted on.
Item G9, Report on Tax Incremental Financing District Results for Calendar Year 2013.
Motion to receive and place on file.
Okay. Is there a second? Been moved and seconded. Only one comment, Paul, and that's that TIF districts 3 and 4, unlike TIF district number 2, are under the purview and the jurisdiction management of the Common Council, not the CDA.
That's correct.
Okay. And just real quick, how are we? My understanding is TIF 3, where Northwestern Mutual is kind of a no brainer, and we're doing great there. And TIF 4 is basically where Wheaton Franciscan is. We're more than keeping our head above water. So
those are both correct statements.
Okay. So any further questions, Alderman Wilhelm?
Well, I'm going to point of order on the last item. I would like the opportunity to know what your recommendation was that we voted on, and. I would like to meet with you afterward about that, but I didn't know that the intention was to cut off debate when debate was asked for.
Well, actually, a point of order would be directed at the chair, and then the chair would determine if the point of order is correct or not.
I didn't get the opportunity. It was voted on when I had a question on the table, and debate was cut off.
All right, we have a motion on the floor to place on file, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Correct. Any further discussion?
Alderman.
Who is it? Oh, and Alderman Mayor just for the record stepped out for a moment. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries. Let's see. Item 10.
Motion to deny.
So motion to deny. Is there a second?
Second.
Mr. City Attorney.
And that's based upon in concurrence with the insurance adjuster that the investigation revealed that the city of Franklin was not negligent.
That's correct.
Or liable for this incident and should have discretionary immunity.
That is correct. That's my motion.
The second of the motion, is that your understanding?
Yes.
All right. That's Alderman Dandria. And did we just vote on that?
No.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. Now turn to miscellaneous licenses.
Okay. Operator new, Prober, approve of the letter. Saran Rodriguez, hold for appearance. Patricic, approve. Grewal, approve. Singh, approve. That's my motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. For the record, Alderman Mayer has returned. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries. We have a revised item on the agenda for vouchers and payroll. And I would ask, is there a motion approving net general checking account city vouchers in the ranges numbers 150445 through numbers 150675 in the amount of $1,431,243.95 dated December 27, 2013 through January 3rd, 2014?
So move.
Second. Second. It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman D'Andrea.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Skronsky.
Aye.
Six ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Is there a motion approving the net payroll dated December 27th, 2013, in the amount of $366,937.79, per an estimate previously approved at $354,000, per an, and payments of the various payroll deductions in the amount of $220,267.04 per an, estimate previously approved at $218,000 per an, plus any city matching payments where required. Is there a motion to that effect?
So move.
Is there a second?
Second.
Moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please take Alderman Wilhelm. You
next.
Alderman Wilhelm.
No, it's.
I'm sorry, Alderman.
Clerk.
You're not an Alderman. It's,
Alderman Clerk.
Alderman.
Clerk.
Madam Clerk.
Alderman Skronsky.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman D'Andrea.
Aye.
Six ayes, no noes. Ayes have it. Motion carries. Alderman Wilhelm.
I just want to know how we end up with $90,500 in property tax refunds. We're giving property. We're voting to give property tax refunds, and I just wanted to know how we end up with $90,500.
Mr. Treasurer,
those refunds are a result of taxpayers making payments on taxes with escrow tax checks,
okay,
and those escrow checks exceeded the amount of the bill for the property.
Thank you. That's what I thought.
So you're just not willy nilly, just whoever you like.
Because I could take some of it and send me a check.
Ooh. Yeah. Make for a nice campaign piece.
Yeah.
Okay. Motion approving the net payroll dated January 10th, 2014, in amount of $355,830.56, and payroll deductions and city matching payments of $206,178. Is there a motion to that effect? Is there a second?
Second.
Then moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman D'Andrea.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Scranton.
Aye.
Six ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Is there a motion approving property tax refunds in the ranges numbers 12001 through numbers 12211 in the amount of $90,557.24 dated December 27th through December 30th, 2013?
So move.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman Skronsky.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman D'Andrea.
Aye.
Six ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. There's a motion approving $14,275 in additional requests.
So moved.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Mr. Liberto?
I just want to point out that the Alliance Benefit Group is Oxient, our DPA, so it's for run-out insurance claims for this year, so it's part of our health plan. And because I want to double-check that the vendor listed is by the right name. I think that's a group above, but I have to make sure I have the checks tomorrow. So if we have to change the name, it would only be to Oxient, but it's for the same purpose.
By the way, I did follow your direction today. I did not see that on the no reply for approval.
I'll look into that.
Okay. Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Alderman D'Andrea.
Aye.
Alderman Mayer.
Aye.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Aye.
Alderman Taylor.
Aye.
Alderman Schmidt.
Aye.
Alderman
Skronsky.
Aye. Six ayes, no noes, ayes have it. Motion carries. Motion adjourned.
So moved.
Second. Seconds, but moved and seconded. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, ayes have it. Motion carries.